We heard a Gershwin medley, a very clever one, bringing together Gershwin's concerto for piano, music from his opera, Porgy and Bess, music from The Rhapsody in Blue, music from An American in Paris, all performed by the chamber ensemble I Salonisti, and that's from their album called Transatlantic, a musical voyage from the old world to the new. You're listening to Classical WMUK 89.9 FM. And as I promised earlier, today we'll be having a discussion about the latest issue of Encore magazine with its editor, Marie Lee, who is on the line with me right now. Good morning to you, Marie.
Hey, good morning, Kara.
Nice to talk to you again. I take full responsibility for the fact that it's January 12th and not January 1st as we talk.
Well, you know, we are all a little busy around January 1st, so that's okay.
Well, I know that by now your whole mindset must be on the February issue, but so I thank you for coming back a few weeks and bringing us into the new issue with some insights and maybe some behind-the-scenes observations on putting out an issue with some terrific stories in it. And, you know, Marie, I wanted to start not with the cover story, but with a story that you reported yourself in this issue. You talked to the director of Kalamazoo Valley Community College's Law Enforcement Training Center, Victor Ledbetter, and it turned into a wonderful conversation, very revealing, a man at the center of some big issues in our time, law enforcement, the social justice, being a Black man in America, and how he is kind of grappling with those things and continuing his career at the same time.
Absolutely. I think Victor was brought to our attention by Portage Mayor Patricia Randall because he had just become a Portage Council member as well. Mm. So he sees it, he's really looking at governance from both sides, having been a practitioner in the police force and then as a resident and a council member who has to make decisions about a community. So I thought it was really interesting to talk to him about that, but the conversation totally focused on mostly on what he was doing with the diversity training because it was so fascinating to talk to him about how he implemented that at KVCC. He had taken it from a 25-hour program to a 50-hour program, a whole week-long thing. And it's something that I think a lot of us, if we had to go through, it would change us. It would absolutely change our mindset.
Did he set out to become, you know, an expert on this, or was he more or less forced by circumstances to embrace this kind of training?
Well, interestingly, he was a Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety officer with his wife, Stacy Randolph Ledbetter. And when they were serving together, Stacy was in the training division, and she developed a training program on diversity training. And so he had been through that and seen the impact that that had had on KDPS officers. And when he went and when he became the director of the Police Academy program at KVCC, he brought that program and expanded it. So I think, you know, it wasn't necessarily that he was forced into it, but he saw the absolute value in what it brought when he was acting police officer, and he wanted his cadets to have that training and that experience before they went out on the street, before they were out in the situations that he, you know, had been in.
Over the summer, the police force was heavily criticized for its response to the Proud Boys March in August. Did you talk about that at all?
We actually did not address that. We focused mostly on what the training was about. Interestingly, I think that the training, I don't know how it would have impacted the officers that were reacting to the Proud Boys movement. But one of the things that Victor said is it's all about relationships and about listening. And, I think that he wanted his cadets to understand maybe why people were having the reactions they were having. But, we did not really discuss it, I don't think at all.
Victor Ledbetter's profile is in the January issue of Encore magazine. He is a Portage City Council member now, you said, and also the director of the Law Enforcement Training Center at Kalamazoo Valley Community College. And it's wonderful to get to know the individual who can set the tone, make the connections in his work as we live in this community. I appreciate getting to know this individual through Encore. You have a lot of choices, I suppose, Marie, in who to profile, but in many ways, this is an ideal candidate.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when we looked at him for January, January's issue, we felt like because they do their diversity training in February, and there's a lot of community members that are actually involved in that, that come in and participate in the circles of healing and the sessions where the cadets get to listen to people talk about their experiences and share, you know, and a lot of times, you know, the cadets don't necessarily share, but one of the things that Victor said is many times the cadets that come through his program come from communities where they didn't experience a lot of diversity, and they have kind of been, you know, they have certain notions that are ingrained in them from their, you know, relatives or community. And it's like he kind of has to untrain them and make them think about things differently. But so anyway, we just saw the timing was perfect, knowing that the next diversity training was beginning. We had no idea that some of the other stuff that would happen in January happened in January. And I'm referring, of course, to the Capitol riots and how the Capitol Police handled that. But I would say that the issues that he addresses with his cadets, unfortunately, he only can do it 30 people at a time. And I asked him if that was bothersome. I said, you know, does it bother you that you can only do this kind of training with a police academy of 30 students at a time? And he's like, you know, I'll take what I can get. I'll change what I can change. And so, you know, it'd be nice if the whole world got to go through this kind of training, because it's obviously very much needed.
I'm speaking with the editor of Encore magazine, Marie Lee. Encore magazine is online at EncoreKalamazoo.com. You can also pick it up in, is it hundreds of locations around the...
Well, right now it's more like, yeah, 100. I mean, it's definitely, we've been impacted, but you can find it at most of the, you know, the major grocery stores, like D&W, Sewall's, Harding's, they all have it. That's actually where most people are picking it up right now.
On the cover, there is a picture of three gentlemen and standing in front of a distinctive blue door that I sure recognize from driving downtown and even attending any number of musical concerts there. They're standing in front of First Baptist Church. And the story of what the story here is the transformation of the church into a shared space for nonprofits.
And artists. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, it's, you know, it was, I mean, what do you do with a 22,000 square foot church?
22,000 you know? Square feet.
I know. And you know, Kalamazoo has a lot of churches that are like that. You just have to go, you know, in Bronson Park and just, you know, kind of go around in 360 degrees, and you're going to see several churches that are these big, beautiful buildings with these annexes that have all this space in them. And, you know, the Baptist church was kind of facing a crisis because its congregation was dwindling. It definitely didn't need 22,000 square feet of space, but it had to maintain it. And so David Nichols and also his next-door neighbor on First Congregational, I think it's First Congregational, Nathan Dannison, the pastor there, it was actually kind of Nathan that prodded it along, but they said, why don't we take this space and do something creative and wonderful for the community with it? And they came up with the Kalamazoo Nonprofit Advocacy Coalition. And, well, I mean, it's kind of a, you know, odd name, but basically what it is they've taken this beautiful space that the church has, and they are renting it below market to artisans and nonprofits, to allow them to exist and be supported in a way that, you know, they wouldn't be able to do if they had to go out and rent something at full market rate.
It's a mouthful, Kalamazoo Nonprofit Advocacy Coalition. I think it is. I'm guessing they with KNAC, they just maybe call it KNAC. I don't
know.
They do. Okay. this was reported by Katie Houston, a Kalamazoo resident and a longtime, she's had her interests and fingers in a lot of nonprofit work. How do you, this sounds like a kind of story where, you know, the drama is in the committee meetings. I mean, it sounds like one of those, why did I get myself into this kind of things when you're halfway through? How is that where she found a lot of the storyline? It was just through people grinding it out and talking.
I think, you know, she knew who to talk to. Most of the grinding out had really been done before we attacked the story. They've been in the process of doing this for a couple of years. The big movement in the fall was for KNAC to actually buy the building from the church, which is huge. I mean, you know, you're buying a 22,000 square foot building on a major commercial, throughway in downtown Kalamazoo, and the church, it was one of those things where they delicately approached it. It was like this kabuki dance kind of. And so Katie started the story about in the middle of that. And so there was a lot of, you know, clarification going back and forth. But I think that she really enjoyed, she just loved being able to go to the space and walk around and see how people were using it, or talk about how people wanted to use it. I mean, there's a small chapel up on the fourth floor that when we went there to do photos was empty. And all you could do was stand there and go, wow, this could be the coolest space for an artist or, you know, a musician, just because of the way it's set up. And anyway, I think that it was interesting because she did have to go back and forth a lot between the different parties, but they are all very aligned. David Nichols, the pastor of the church, you know, he is very much central in this, and he sees this as helping his congregation survive and thrive without this huge weight of this big building on them that they have to take care of, maintain, and, you know, essentially, you know, support. And so the building, I believe when we did the story, KNAC was just in the very final phases of solidifying the purchase agreement. And I think it's gone through now, but it is, like I said, it's one of those things when you're reporting, because of the nature of the beast, people don't want to really reveal stuff, you know? And so she had to dance around a little bit, I think.
Well, in the article, there is a quick read on who the organizations and individuals are. There are some, I think 22 of them, and it would take too long to read them all. But, you know, side by side at this new KNAC Center, the First Baptist Church of Kalamazoo, we have Kalamazoo Loaves and Fishes, a very well-known food relief program, Suzuki Academy of Dance, Suzuki Academy of Kalamazoo, that's music. Mm-hmm. Western Michigan University, actually, is reserving some space there.
Right.
A real grab bag of different of different interests, art. There's something called Bear Trees and Delectables. So that sounds.
Yep. There's actually a couple food and other people that make things. Like, there's Bear Trees and Delectables. That's a bakery, and so is Huey D's Goodies. Apparently, this facility has an amazing kitchen, and so you have people that are producing. Cottage industries there. You have the SKTO gear protective apparel, and they're doing protective gear for people. And then at the same time, you also have, you know, Queer Theater Kalamazoo. And so what you really see is that they have opened this space in a big way. And for a former church to be maybe supporting a queer theater is, I think, a little bit unorthodox. But it shows the intention, and the intention is to support the community and improve the community, and they jumped in it wholeheartedly with both feet.
Marie, this is a positive story. This is one of those stories that makes you kind of feel good about the hard work it took for these mostly volunteer community members to make this vision real. over a long period of time.
Right. And I think that they're very open. I'm not open, but they're very aware of what is yet to be done. I mean, one of the things that they told Katie was that they have an immediate need for $300,000 just to do urgent updates. And to put high-speed internet in that building would cost $8,000. And when you go in the building, you can totally see why. I mean, this building was built back before internet was even a concept. You know, I think it's, I'm trying to remember if it's 100 years old. When was the building built? It was built in, it completed in 1855. And so it's more than 100 years old. Yeah. It's very old, you know, and you, so, you know, they still have a big challenge ahead of them. And I know that the KNET group is in the process of trying to figure out how to do a capital campaign and fundraise. But it is interesting because it's not, like you said, it's a very diverse group of volunteers that are serving to do this. There's nobody that, you know, paid to be in charge of this organization. I mean, it's a bunch of volunteers that are going to make this happen. And I think that's the thing about Kalamazoo is we are a plucky little town that has people that are very passionate about what they do and what they care about. And they're very creative when they find solutions. And I think this story is just another one of those great examples that we come across of people who, you know, make things happen.
Kalamazoo does have a track record of community of organizations coming together to cooperate and not compete. If they find out they're competing, often there's just an accepted let's find a way so that we're out of each other's faces, like on the same weekend or something similar to that. There's a track record, and so this isn't a totally surprising story, but it's necessary. It's a story from our community about a place now that has transformed into a place of opportunity and change, possibly, and a way for nonprofits or artists who couldn't find a place to operate, now they have this option, downtown Kalamazoo.
Right. And it's amazing because when we visited the spaces for the Artsy Mama and for Tai Chua Dance, I'm a big old building person. I love historic buildings. And I was so envious. I was like, I could be totally creative in these spaces. They're so beautiful. And so for the church to open that up and let people come and create there or just be a nonprofit there, it's, it's remarkable. I think it's a really remarkable project.
And your photographer, Brian Powers, did a great job capturing some of these diverse spaces within First Baptist Church. We do see the dance studio with dancers in it and more than that.
Yeah.
My guest is Marie Lee, the editor of Encore magazine, and we're talking about the January issue. And in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about the February issue. I saw that one of the, you always feature a place that has some kind of treasures or curiosities about it. And this month it's the A.M. Todd Rare Book Room. And I was like, where is this? Where's the A.M. Todd Rare Book Room?
Oh my gosh. It's in Kalamazoo College's Upjohn Library. And it's actually open to the public. Somebody said it to me that they had no idea that the public could go up there. Of course, right now, you know, COVID hours notwithstanding, but when the world is opened up again, it is a real treat. I mean, and so Mallory Heslinger, she is the librarian and curator up there. And when we reached out to her and we said, hey, share some stuff, she was so excited. And I'm sure we could go back to her and she could give us, you know, five or 10 more. But I don't know. I think my favorite, I mean, everybody's going to be like, my favorite is the miniature. Mine is the works of Thomas Gray. I absolutely love the four-edge painting on the book. It is the coolest thing.
Again, you'll have to pick up the January issue of Encore in order to see what we're talking about. That must have been hard for the curator to choose just five, but there must be a kind of special atmosphere in a room filled with old, old things.
Right. Especially, you know, it's so cliche. In the digital age where books, you know, hard books or hardcover books are just not, I guess, as relished as they once were, right? And so these, I look at it as just a fascinating reminder of how we got to where we are today. Because had there never been language that was put into books, the knowledge would not have spread. And, you know, I think maybe it's a far leap. I'm jumping there too. But, you know, it's like books are so pivotal in the history of the world. And these books, I mean, are just, they're just so rare and unique. They're incredible. I mean, it's hard to, I know it's hard to talk about it on the radio, but when you look at that little miniature book that's just about the size of a penny, and every little page turns, and there's actual type on there that you could look at if you had the right magnification. Somebody created that. Why they created that, I will never know, but somebody created that, and it's just a work of art. It's amazing.
My guest is Marie Lee, editor of Encore magazine, and we're looking at some of the stories in January's issue. And another one I wanted to bring up is a profile of a man of faith who resisted for a while a teaching career, and beyond, and when he gave into that, he eventually decided he needed to found a school, and it's a school in our community called Tree of Life School. Maybe you could tell us a little more about him.
All right. Adam Sarin, this is, it's interesting when you listen to teenage children talk to each other. And this story actually came to us from one of my son's friends in high school. And he was telling me about, you know, what his dad did. And he's like, oh, my dad runs a school in the Edison neighborhood. And I was like, well, tell me about that. And so he kind of told me the story. And I thought, this is pretty interesting that there's this guy who's an educator, and he swears God told him that he needed to open a church in the Edison neighborhood in Kalamazoo. And he did it, and he made it happen. I think this is another one of those cases of, you know, I think a lot of the stories in our issue, from Victor Ledbetter to the Kanak to Adam Sternberg, are really stories about people who believe very strongly in what they need to do, and they do it. You know, they make it happen. And so, she was very candid with our writer, Jordan Bradley. In fact, she said he was really a fun interview because, you know, he's pretty humble, and he was talking about how arrogant he was as a guy that thought, you know, that he didn't need to do these things. And he was really a lot of fun. So he started this school in the Edison neighborhood. It's obviously a private and a religious school, but it's essentially an option for parents who want something different for their kids. And it's tuition is very, very affordable. I mean, it costs 5% of a family's annual income with a rate of $25 per month. And the school had grown so fast that they ended up having to expand. And they were originally started in St. Joseph's in the church there in the Edison neighborhood. And they had to expand, and they got a plot of land donated to them on Cameron Street. They built the church, and then a year later had to put in a gym and some other classrooms because they were growing so fast. And right now they're at capacity. And so they have 72 students. So
I think you may have misspoke. You said they built a church, but they built you mean the school facility?
Sorry. Yeah. They built the school. Yes, I'm so sorry. Yes.
Also a church, or it's a it's education?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I am so sorry. Yeah, no, I misspoke. So they built this church. And they built this school. I got to get out of the KNAC. Sorry. Okay, in my head. But they built this school, and it's just, you know, and it's interesting because I was talking to Adam after we did the story, and he was saying that they're trying to figure out if they can get more space because they had so much interest in the school. And, you know, and he sees it, and he and his family live in the Edison neighborhood. So they're right there. They know their neighbors. And I think that's how he's made a lot of contacts with the families of the kids that go to his school. And, you know, he's very, very clear about it's not just education. It's about supporting a student, helping support their family if they need help. You know, there's a story where, you know, he's actually gone in and helped people fix their refrigerators, you know, of his student parents, because that's what they needed. And whatever it is to educate a kid, he will do.
I think you fulfilled your your own mission as editor this month with stories that I couldn't have predicted, but truly illuminate what makes our community work. All these folks who are following visions in a way. Great job.
Well, thank you.
Well, we're near the end of our chat, I think. And one final thing to look at is I don't think I've asked you yet. There's always a poetry feature.
Yes.
Is that one of the fun things? Do you do that last or start with, let me start with this month's poem?
No, actually, so our poetry editor is Margaret DeRitter. A lot of people might know Margaret. She was the arts and entertainment editor at the Kalamazoo Gazette for a very long time. And she's also a poet, and she's very tied into the poet, the poetic community, I guess, not probably the way I should have said it. But one thing I will say is that Margaret works very hard to find poems that work with our issues, whether it's, you know, the kind of the topics or the timing. And so it used to be I used to get the poem first, and then she waited to see the copy, because she's also our copy editor. She kind of waited to see the copy for an issue, and then she'd come back and go, I think this would work really well with this issue. And so, yeah, so we don't get to start with the poem, but we always end up with something pretty wonderful that fits really well with the issue.
That's even better. She does the hard work of copy editing, and then while all the while her mind is intuitively reaching for that creative poem that'll cap it all off. I do.
Yep. She does a great job.
Well, thanks for chatting with me today again, Marie. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to talk about the new issue. Are any teasers for us today?
Well, yes. Actually, I would say I'm head down in it. I would say that I'm pretty excited about our cover feature, which is about Dr. Michelle Johnson, who is probably a household name for a lot of people, but she probably ought to be. She has got so much going on. She's working so hard to do to bring inclusion and equity and racial justice into our community. And when you read about all the things that she has got her fingers in, it's mind-blowing. It's cliche to say, but I do not know when she sleeps. I have no idea. But she approaches everything from her background as a historian. And, you know, so it's a pretty fascinating feature. I'm really excited for that one to come out.
EncoreKalamazoo.com is the name of the website where you can find this issue, January's issue, as well as February's next month. And, of course, you can pick it up any number of locations around Southwest Michigan. Marie, great to chat with you, and we'll do it again soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Kara.